We now come to the last study of our series on Ezra notes, on Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. All right. When we study Ezra, you would have already done Ezra in the meeting here. So it was a review. You have not done Nehemiah yet. That was an introduction and a preview of what Nehemiah had to give to you. Today, we go on to Esther. Now, Esther is a fantastic book. In fact, the last 1 week or so, as I studied, I was very thrilled by it, because it is a book that is very challenging, and it fits the times of today. For such times as this, this is Esther. Very, very suitable for our current time. As usual, we shall go on to the study first of the person of the book, the perspective of the book, and then lastly, the certain peculiarities in the book. So, a very quick recapitulation. You would remember that the books that we are studying in, that are namely Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, would record events after the captivity in Babylon. The children of Israel were coming back to Jerusalem under the reign of, well, 3 to 4 kings in Persia. King Cyrus was the one who initiated the return, and the first return was under Zerubbabel. And that return was to reconstruct or to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. Then, after that, Ezra came years later, and he came in to challenge the people to reform, because the people were getting too happy and comfortable after coming back, and they were settling down to the circumstances around their neighborhood. So Ezra came with reforms. Then, even then, after that, there came again a backsliding. And then we find Nehemiah coming back in the third return, and this time he also had to deal with almost the same sins that Ezra found when he came back. Now, where does Esther come in? Esther comes in between, over here. Esther would come in between the two returns of Zerubbabel and Ezra. Now, please don't take this as subsequent events that appeared very fast, because there was a time of period. For example, there would be a time period of 57 years between the first return and the second return, and then 12 more years between the second and third before we would come on to Malachi, who prophesied for the last time, and then there would be 400 years of silence. And so this is the perspective we ought to see as we study Esther, who would come in somewhere here. Alright. Ezra chapters 1 to 6, Ezra 7 to 10. In between, we have the events that are occurring in Esther. And although we have in our Bible Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, as the events recorded in Esther do not occur after Nehemiah, but they occurred in the time of Ezra, between chapters 1 to 6 and 7 to 10. So we must note that when we study Esther. Esther can be, very briefly, can be divided into 4 main divisions. One, we have the first chapters 1 and 2 of Esther's exaltation. That's when Queen Vashti was deposed and Esther came into the scene. Then we have in chapters 3 to 4 Haman's coming, contriving plot to exterminate the Jews, to kill the whole race of the Jews. Then chapter 5 to chapter 7, we have how God moved his hand behind the scene to bring about the failure of that plot. And then finally, we see the Jews winning a victory. That roughly will help you in your study of the book of Esther with the four divisions. You will know where each event would take place. Alright? The book of Esther will cover only a period of about 10 years or so. And here you have the topics covered in each section. So I leave that to you. Now let's go on because we need a lot of time. Person of the book. Of course, the book of Esther must be about Esther. Esther was a Persian name. Alright? Persian, not a Jew. And therefore, Esther would be a Gentile name given to her probably when she was taken in for the harem of the king. The king in chapter 2 and verse 17 had a lot of concubines. And yeah, Esther would be the new one taken in. And she probably, when taken in, was given a new name, Esther. Now, Esther actually is a name taken from a Babylonian goddess. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, because, you know, like us all, I go to hospitals quite often these days because of my age, and especially at Allen Hospital, I would see a lot of Indonesian patients. Early in the morning, there would be a lot of Indonesian patients. And if I look at them, they were Chinese. They're actually Chinese. But if I talk to them in Chinese, they couldn't understand me. Because they are Indonesians. Now, probably that would be Esther. Esther, she had a Babylonian name, a Persian name, but then she was a Jew, a Jewess. Her Jewish name, if you read chapter 2 and verse 7, would mean myrtle, a beautiful flower and plant. And I understand, I've not seen it. A movie or a film or whatever it was has been filmed for Esther. And a very beautiful actress pictured her. Well, I hope that this Esther that we are studying as beautiful as this girl in on the screen. Alright, that's her Persian name. Now what about her background? Very quickly, she was a daughter of Abihail, a Benjamite, and uncle of Mordecai. A name that is very important, Mordecai. Now, Mordecai was the uncle of the father of Esther. That would make Esther and Mordecai cousins. Alright? She was an orphan, as we read in chapter 2, verses 5 to 7. But she was adopted by Mordecai, so that instead of cousin, she called Mordecai father. Now, that's not surprising. For example, I'll just take myself. Now, some of you might know of Mr. Tan Wah Kim. Mr. Tan Wah Kim's wife is my real cousin. My real cousin. But when I was small, I was very sickly, and my superstitious grandparents would, you know, in those days, ask somebody to adopt a sick person. So I was adopted by Dorothy Ang's mother. So Dorothy Ang actually was my cousin. But because I was adopted by her mother, I became her godbrother. You hope you know the difference. So Dorothy Ang was my actual cousin, but he became my godbrother, and Dorothy Ang, don't be mistaken, is now my daughter. I hope you are not confused. That's a fact. Dorothy Ang is my daughter. Because I want my daughter to be as talented as my god sister. Well, that's another matter. I'm telling you all this because when you read the book of Esther, you get confused also with all these relationships. So I better get you confused now so that you will not be confused later. Her ancestor was Kish. Now, Kish, you remember, was the father of Saul. Now, don't again be confused, because the Kish, the father of Saul, would have lived over 100 years ago. So that would mean Esther would be very old. So that Kish was not the same Kish as the father of King Saul. Her family did not come to return to Jerusalem in the return back to with Zerubbabel or Nehemiah. They stayed back in Persia. So this is the situation of the background of Queen Esther. Alright, her present position. She at this moment would be the queen of the king of Persia, Ahasuerus, who divorced Vashti. Vashti was the ordinary queen, and Esther was the concubine in the harem. But the queen refused to come to be presented to the king's princes and the leaders when he held a banquet. As a result, we find that Queen Vashti was dethroned because the king was very angry. The advisors to the king said, if you read all that in chapter 1, 13 to 2:18, the advisors said, you must punish the queen for not coming when you give her the order to come. Because if you do not punish her, then all the husbands would also be looked down upon by their wives, because they don't obey their husbands anymore. So punish her. So to give me an example that all wives must be submissive to husbands. And so she was dethroned, and Queen Esther became queen. Was that a chance, a coincidence, luck? We shall find out later on. Her character. She was a woman of deep piety and patriotism. Now, although we do not read of her praying to God or doing something like that, but from the very way she conducted herself, we know that she was very pious. We know that she was true to her God. Though we do not know of the mention of such a God in her life, we know also that she was very patriotic. She was very concerned with the Jewish race. She was a willing, obedient, docile, beautiful daughter to Mordecai. Very good girl. And of course, she was also a good wife to the king, because she was able to influence the king with regard to the salvation and rescue of the Jewish race later on. She was a winsome personality that when she was introduced to the princes, they were all in favor of her becoming queen. She said, they said she was very beautiful, and they were in favor, she was in favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. That's what we read. Her contribution in the preservation of her Jewish community, we shall see later. Was she there by chance or by luck? Was she there because she connived to be there? or was it God working behind the scene to put her there, that she was there at a time when she was needed? We shall consider that when we come on to chapter 7. Right, we have finished with the person of the book. Now the perspective of the book. First, we start with the human authorship. Who wrote the book of Esther? Now, if you read through the whole book of Esther, 10 chapters, very quickly, you can finish it. You cannot find any authorship referred to. No name of the author mentioned. We do not know who. As a result, some people claim that it could be Mordecai, Ezra, or Nehemiah himself. Well, no one could be sure. But definitely, it was written by a Jew. Because in that book of Esther, you find a lot of customs, cultures at that particular time in the king's palace. You know, forgive me for saying that, but I'm quite a fan of Korean films and Chinese films, especially those films that show the Chinese culture and so on. And in all those Chinese movies, on the TV, not on the cinema hall, I've never been there. On the TV, you'll find that there would be concubines, a lot of concubines, plotting against one another and so on to see who could get the king's favor and other things. Well, when I read Esther, I found here I'm coming to another Chinese movie on TV. Oh, I was enjoying myself. If you enjoy Korean movie and Chinese movie, please read Esther. You enjoy it. And you read of the connivances of the various princes, concubines, and kings trying to outwit each other. All right. What about God? Now, this is one book in the whole Bible that does not even mention God at all. Can you believe that? The word God is not found there. Not only God or any form that can point to God found there. But does it mean that God is not there? As somebody has said, you may not find the form of God there, but you'll find the finger of God there. He is moving behind the scene. You know, it's an encouragement to us, especially sometimes when we find that God seems to be so silent, so far away. Is God there? Is God behind us or not? What are we going to do? The God seems to be so silent. Perhaps we would cry, as this morning the Lord Jesus cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? You are nowhere, I cannot find you, I cannot see you. So this was the challenge in the book of Esther. Where is God? But even as we do not see or hear the mention of God, we find that God is moving behind the scene. And that's why we see this again and again in the book, in the books of Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. The hand of God. For example, you see the hand of God in Ezra. You read in chapter 7, verse 6, the king granted him all his requests according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. Ezra wanted to go back to Jerusalem. And there was the king offering all the resources available. Take them, just say so, and that will be, those things will be given to you. Why is that possible? He believed, at least Ezra believed, that it was God's hand moving behind the scene to do this. When he arrived in Jerusalem, and there again, all safe, traveling the 900 miles or so from Persia over to Jerusalem, and safe. Now, the hand of God was protecting them. Thirdly, 7:28, I was strengthened as the hand of the Lord my God was upon me, and I gathered together out of Israel chief men to go up with me. He had company, good company, faithful men who would go with him. Who made this possible? Must be the God behind him. 8:18, and by the good hand of our God upon us, they brought us a man of understanding. In chapter 8, we find that Ezra found that there was no Levite in the midst of the group that came back with him. And so he prayed, and he found somebody from the Levite line, and that he believed to be the hand of God helping him to find somebody. The hand of our God is upon all them for good that seek him. And that was his conclusion at the end, that indeed God's hand was behind everything that happened. You know, sometimes we are wondering whether we should act before the hand of God. Now, last night I was confronted with a situation where a person, let me take you back to another incident, because you might identify the person concerned. I do not want that. Let me step back to an accident years ago. Suppose there's a man teacher and a woman teacher. They are closely akin to be married. But two of them would stay in different places far away, and they wanted therefore to ask for a transfer to be together. But the date of the transfer time, they were still far away, and they could not say that they were man and wife. So what would they do? They would quickly register themselves as man and wife first, and then apply. So there was no marriage ceremony in the church, but just in order to facilitate a transfer, they would just come together, sign as man and wife in the marriage of registry, and then, although they're still not man and wife, proclaim themselves as man and wife and ask for a transfer out. Now, normally, we would not think that's right, because there is, in a way, cheating the government in order to facilitate your transfer. Do you believe in the hand of God? That the hand of God can make it possible for you to come together and get a transfer when you do things rightly and correctly. There is a challenge to young people who seek to get married and who want to be together, because at that time they are not together. The hand of God also in Nehemiah. In Nehemiah, we also read chapter 2, verse 8, the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Again, we find that the king granted the Nehemiah all the resources that he needed in order to return to Jerusalem. Chapter 2, verse 18, I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, was also the king's words that he had spoken unto me, and so on. So Ezra, Nehemiah were very confident that in achieving and accomplishing what they wanted to do, there was always behind them the hand of God. And I think as Christians, we need to be conscious of that, that the hand of God is always behind us. That many things happen to us, not by coincidence or by chance, but they, you know, I only wish I had time to relate to you the many, many experiences that I have had. You may call it coincidence, you may call it chance, but I believe it to be the hand of God in my life to work out the things that which I think are not possible, and yet at that very moment became possible. Think about it. I'm sure he has done this in your life. And so we come on to Esther. In Esther, we don't see the hand of God. There's no mention of it. But was the hand of God absent? No. I believe the hand of God was present, as we shall see when we study Esther chapter 7 later on. So, we will have to ask this question. Was it a coincidence or a chance that Esther was where she was and she could help the Jewish race to be preserved before they got terminated? When written, well, again, because of the uncertainty, people were not sure. It could be written about 465 BC, and well, that's, if you are interested in historical facts, the facts are all on my screen. To whom written? We believe that for, at that time, it would be for the Jews in general, those who have been persecuted and those who have returned and were facing dangers and so on. All right. It would give hope to the Jews to live on, to carry on, in spite of the persecution facing them, in spite of the death threats facing them. Why was it written? Very quickly, historically, of course, to document and to record a few things. One, the rise of Esther to power in the Persian kingdom, so that we know what is going on today, why so many Jews in Israel today honor Esther every single year, as we shall find later on. The reign of King Ahasuerus of Persia, the ruthless plot to exterminate the Jews by Haman, the rescue of the Jews by the sovereign hand of God, how it was done, Mordecai's rise to prominence as a result of his rescue of the Jews, the rejoicing in the Feast of Purim. Today, every year in Israel, the Jews will come together for the Feast of Purim. And we ask ourselves, what is the Feast of Purim, which I shall explain afterwards. But in the meanwhile, let me remind you of the spiritual purpose of Esther, the reminder of the returned people, of the returned Jewish exiles, that God is faithful, the revelation of the sovereignty of God, that God is behind all things, in spite of everything else, that the God will give to everyone according to the fruits of what he does. Alright, so when you read Esther, you will find that although God is not mentioned, he is in control. And the Jews have returned, but they need to be faithful, and he will protect them in spite of the threats from the enemies. Then you see the sovereignty of God manifested so clearly, although again I mentioned the name of God is not mentioned at all. Right. Now, another thing you'll be fascinated with when we come to the peculiarities of the book, that there are a lot of feasts. I do not know whether you enjoy feasts or not, banquets and feasts, but last night I was at a feast and I'm suffering from the consequences of attending that feast. You see, my voice now is very hoarse. In fact, I was a bit afraid that, like last week, I might lose my voice. I've been stuffing myself with a lot of sweets. All right. Why was I suffering? Because the PA system was so loud, I could hardly speak to my friend sitting next door to me. I had to shout to him. And therefore, too much shouting and no more voice. I'm hoarse. Never mind. So far, the Lord has given me enough voice to talk. There are 10 banquets in Esther. Fantastic. Those of you who enjoy eating, feasting, Facebook, every now and then posting, food, 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 read Esther. The king's banquet for first chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. There was a king. He held a banquet. And he had a banquet. I said, yesterday night, 3 hours, one night, enough for me already. He held the banquet for 180 days, 6 months. I think I'll die before I even carry on. I wouldn't enjoy the food. 180 days, the people had to come and to enjoy the food. And above all, to see the display of his riches, of his kingdom. Immediately after that, had a 7-day feast again. Not for the princes, but for the people. He was very kind. First he gave the feast for the leaders and the princes, and now for the leaders. Chapter 1, verses 5 to 8. But, this is where the Queen Vashti came on. The queen, his partner, refused to come. She, in turn, had her own dinner. Her own feast, her own banquet, for women only, men not allowed. She seemed to be a feminist, I'm not sure. She refused to come before the king wearing the royal crown, and she was put aside. The king wanted to show her off, my beautiful queen, to all the princes and all the people. Come, put on a crown. Now, this is my beautiful queen. She refused to come. And because of that, she was put aside. The people, the king's advisors said, you must not allow her to go free. Because if you allow her to go free, next time the impression given would be that wives can be very strong and husbands, put them aside, don't care about the husbands. So if you allow her to go free like that, all the husbands will suffer. You better punish her. And so the king punished her and deposed her. And was that a fluke? Was that a chance? Was that a coincidence? We shall find out later on. The banquet, then another banquet was given. Because she was deposed, dethroned, Esther came in. She was enthroned. And to celebrate her enthronement, we find another feast was given to celebrate Esther's feast. Then it was Esther herself. Haman himself giving a private banquet to the king. Why? To plot his terrible plan of trying to exterminate all the Jews in the kingdom. Right. The next one was given by Esther. Esther heard about Haman's plan to exterminate the Jewish race. So she was also clever. She also gave another feast. How nice, huh? Today, if you have any trouble, any problem, give a feast. Give a feast. But you can call me. I'll go. But don't have all those audio voices, sounds, big boom, boom, boom there, very loud, cannot hear. I enjoy the food, but I don't enjoy the noise. So the first banquet Esther gave for the king and Haman. All right? She knew that Haman was plotting because Mordecai told her about it. And in that banquet, she got the confidence of the king. And the king was so good, and the king asked, what is your petition? What is your request? Please remember these two occasions. He was so impressed with her, he asked, what is your petition? What is your request? Anything to ask, I'll give you. I'll give you to half my kingdom. Then she had a second banquet. This time again with the king and Haman. And in that banquet, she pointed a finger at Haman and said, he is the one who tries to plot the downfall and death and extermination of the Jewish race. And with that, we find Haman was put down. Chapter 8, 16, 17, there was another public banquet of the Jews when the decree was given in Shushan, the capital, to elevate Mordecai, because Mordecai had done a favor for the king and so he was to be celebrated. Chapter 9, verse 17 to 18, there were two separate feasts to celebrate the victory of the Jews after the exposure of Haman and his plot. Finally, we have the Feast of Purim. Now, this Feast of Purim is an important feast to the Jews today because it celebrates the day when the Jews were able to get back at their enemies. You see, the Persian law is such, when the Persian king had given a law to Haman because he conspired it, to exterminate the Jews, that decree had gone out. The background of a Persian decree is this. When the king had given out a decree, he could not withdraw it. And although Esther pleaded with him to withdraw the decree, he could not. Because he had given out. But he went out with another decree. He said, all right, since these people want to kill you, you have my permission, kill them back. Simple. So that's what they did. That's what they did. And that's how the Jewish race was preserved. And to celebrate that victory, they have the Purim feast, the Feast of Purim, every year. All right. But you know, as time goes on, this feast has a lot of changes. Purim now is celebrated annually according to the Hebrew calendar on the 14th day of the Hebrew month of Adar, the day following the victory of the Jews over their enemies. Based on the conclusion of the book of Esther in chapter 9 verse 22, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness and of sending portions one to another and gifts to the poor. Based on this text in chapter 9 verse 22, we find that today Purim is celebrated in this way. Exchanging reciprocal gifts of food and drink known as they have a special cakes and so on, donating to charity, eating a meal together, public recitation in the synagogue, reading the book of Esther, reciting additions to say grace, and then of course the modern world style, drinking introduced. Here are some ideas of how the Jews today celebrate, take advantage of this biblical feast of Purim to celebrate. There they are with these cakes. And then, well, of course, they will go to the synagogue. But today, it's not just mere going to the synagogue, but also to read the book of Esther, also to celebrate. Not in the synagogue, outside as well. And we have it's like a sort of carnival time during the Feast of Purim. Well, this is not biblical, of course, but that's what it has become. Like even today, we have Christmas and Easter and so on. Right. Now we come to the last part. The peculiarities in the book. This time we want to go and zoom in on Esther chapter 7. Esther chapter 7. If you have your Bible with you, you can open it and see with Esther chapter 7. We are going to examine this question. Was it coincidence or chance of God's control circumstances that led Esther to be where she was, so that the Jewish race could be preserved? Or was it due to her own cunning connivance? After Esther chapter 4 and verse 14 tells us that if Esther did not want to do it, somehow or other, Mordecai believed that others would come to deliver Israel. So you see, somehow or other, there is still the belief that behind them all, there was God. Okay, let's look at it now. The conjunction of consequence. Please look at chapter 7, verse 1. I'm not sure whether it is in your NIV or in your other modern translations, but this one little word is very important in the King James Version. So, chapter 7, verse 1. That is the conjunction of consequence, the result. When you say so, it means now, because of these things that happened, these things are happening now. So, that's the consequence. Let's look earlier what happened. There was Haman's plot to annihilate the Jews, chapter 3, verse 6. And there was the people's predicament. Then they know that they will have no chance because Haman had got a decree from the Persian king to exterminate the Jews. They had no chance when it came as a decree, as I said earlier. So how could they ever escape from perishing? God's provision. Mordecai reminded Esther, Esther, you better do something about it. Because if you don't do, you don't go and see the king and tell the king to help us, somehow or other, there will be, I do not know what, there will be some other deliverance that will come to us. Please note the text. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall destroy, shall be destroyed. You don't want to do it, you will be destroyed. But we believe that we are God's people, and somehow God will save us, although the word God is not there. But that is the implication. Therefore, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Come on, Esther. Who knows? We do not know. But the point that you are here now at this time with the opportunity to see the king, to save the people of East, of the Jews, this is the time for you to do it. Who knows? You are here for a special purpose. Now, I think we need to examine ourselves too. That today we are where we are for a special purpose. And we should know the purpose. That if we do not fulfill God's purpose, God's program will not be affected. God's program will be done, will be accomplished by other people, but you will be destroyed, so to speak, between inverted commas. You will not progress as God will progress. Are you accomplishing what God wants to do with you? Who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Now we see the countermeasure against conspiracy. Esther's patience. So Esther, she was a good girl, and she knew her way about doing things. First, look at her patience and her petition. She had 3 days of rallying the people to fast and to forgo all things. You know what she said? I'm going to see the king, but I'm not sure how he is going to entertain me. Never mind. If I perish, I perish. That's her courage. That's her courage. If I perish, I perish. I don't know what's going to happen to me. That's the soul or the consequence. Now, you know, sometimes I mentioned about the case of the teachers trying to be together in order to get to cheat the government and to get the application for transfer and so on. And there are many cases like this. Now, if you're not prepared the truth, then you wonder whether you are doing the right thing or not. So, if you are doing the right thing, be prepared. If I perish, I perish. If I cannot get married, I cannot get married. Well, I won't get married at that time. I'll get married later on when I have the opportunity to do so. That's the consequence you have to pay when you are faithful to the Lord. The 2 days of royal rejoicing. First, she's very clever. She had a dinner, a feast. You must do things in the feast. Anything you want to do, tell me. Have a feast and you invite me. Fine. So, she had a feast, but I'm not your enemy now, please. The 2 days of royal rejoicing. She invited the king and Haman together. Oh, they enjoyed. So much so that she invited them again the second time. The first time, when Haman was invited, he was so happy. He went back to tell his wife and his friends, look, I'm the honored person. The queen invited me, and the king only. Very, very important. Oh, no one else was invited. Only the two of us. She was very proud. He did not know that he was being trapped into that. All right. At that first feast, the queen, Esther, reminded the king. You remember what you told me at the first feast? If you have a petition, ask me. Okay, I'm asking. Grant me my life. This is my petition. You have a request? Ask me. Okay, I have a request. Spare my people. This is my request. She was ready. The king was stuck. He had promised, and he must keep his promise. Spare my life, spare my people. That request was reasonable. Chapter 7, verse 4. Because Haman, in order to exterminate the Jew, had said to the king, exterminate the Jews, get rid of all the Jews. I'm prepared to pay all the money that will be used for the extermination of the Jews. I'm prepared to pay whatever it is to the treasury. Because of that, Esther said, look, I and my people have been sold, because payment had been made, money had been made to exterminate the Jews. The price, Esther, was, I do not mind if this person paid and I become be sold as a slave. I do not mind. If I am sold as a slave, I'm prepared to work as a slave. But I am sold in order that I might die, in order my people will be exterminated. King, help. Her petition and her request. He demanded to know this person and where he was. Now this is the second feast, you know, where Haman and the king were there. Who's that person? Who's that person? Please note. Because he must really see who that person was and in that way see his heart. Because what he did would come out of his heart. Matthew 15:19. And then sentence must be done quickly if we do not want it to spread. Ecclesiastes 8:11. And so, who is this person? Esther stood up. Esther pointed. This adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Can you imagine that? There was the feast. Haman was enjoying it. He was in the front limelight. Now suddenly a finger came out. This is the wicked person. And I'd like you to notice the words used. They are very, very caustic. Haman was now sandwiched in a tight spot. The word adversary means in a tight place. He could not escape. He was now sandwiched in a tight spot. He could not get out now. She also said he was the enemy. And the word enemy is an enemy or a foe. So he was singled out. He who sought to cause distress was now sadly distressed because said, that wicked person was Haman. Wicked there means distress. Wicked. And so he that was causing distress now was under great stress. He sends trouble who sought to put others in trouble. Let us not try to put other people in trouble too. It's a lesson that we need to learn. So the king's rage, he was so angry that he went out into the garden. And as he went out into the garden, Haman realized that he was in trouble already. The king had already decided his fate and what could he do. So he went out to the queen, Queen Esther, and he fell upon the couch where Esther was sitting and said, "Please, please, don't do this to me." And at that very moment, and he said, that's right, he requested the queen, "Please spare his life." And at that very moment, when he was couching on the couch, the king who was in the garden came back. And what did he see? He saw Haman next to the queen on the couch. Now that is terrible, isn't it? That is terrible. How can another person be with my concubine? That is terrible. So he meted out punishment at once to Haman without waiting for explanation. Send for the people, carry him out. And these people came in and they were ready to carry him out by covering his face. Covering his face is bad sign already to take him out. So what should we do with him? And somebody said he had prepared gallows for Mordecai. The gallows are ready now. Let him be there. Was it a coincidence? A chance? All these things happening? Alright. I'm sorry. Okay. So they hang Haman on the gallows. Question. Was it a coincidence or a chance? Or God was controlling the circumstances? When Vashti was dethroned and Esther enthroned, this is the summary questions I ask you now. When Esther credited Mordecai for saving the king from a conspiracy and having it chronicled, when Esther was confronted by Mordecai to come out and stand in company with the Jews, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house, more than all the Jews. You will not stand up for the Jews, you will die one also. You will get into trouble. And the question can also be asked, you are not prepared to stand up for the Lord? Well, something else will happen. We do not know. When Esther's invitation was received by both the king and Haman repeatedly, that Haman was ready to be invited, was it a coincidence? When Haman misread Esther, listening to his wife and friends, and merrily went to the market, to the banquet, was it a coincidence? When the king could not sleep, sent for the chronicles, and discovered that he owed a debt to Mordecai, was it a coincidence? When Haman happened to be present to receive his recommendation to reward himself, was it a... All these things you can read. I have no time to explain them. Haman's wife and advisors realized too late they could not resist God's people. Was it coincidence? We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. So the conclusion is this. God was behind it all. Behind every circumstance and every coincidence. Would you trust in this God? With this, we are finishing our study on Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. We hope that you will see the God not only behind their lives, but also behind your life as well. That as we go on in life, you will know that God is behind you. The Lord bless you.